How is Illinois doing in the nationwide push to text 911 operators?
We always start by saying make a voice call if you can, but we want to have text available as an option if you can't.
That's the FCC's David Firth. We'll talk to him and people involved in Illinois' 911 systems. Plus,
we want some heroes in our story. We need highlights for a nightlight. We need glory for a while. We want results. We want results. Hit our families, hit our folks, bombs bursting in air. Oh, say.
Olympic commercials like that with Chicago artist Chance the Rapper are flooding our screens and airwaves. We'll discuss the style of this year's Olympic ads. And we sit down with the frontman of Central Illinois band Uriah. Their new album drops today.
I felt that I've kind of grown as a musician enough to be able to write songs about things that mean something to me.
That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. When there's an emergency, one of our first reactions is to call 911. But now a new system being introduced around the United States is allowing people to text their requests for help to emergency dispatch centers. By the end of 2016, Illinois is expected to have 14 emergency dispatch centers that have the ability to accept text messages. Currently, throughout Illinois, we have about 300 dispatch centers. In a few minutes, we'll be speaking with a local 911 operator. But joining us now is David Firth, the Deputy Chief of Homeland Security Bureau at the FCC. He's going to explain a little bit more about this system and how it's being rolled out around the country. David, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Nyla. Nice to be here.
Can you first explain what text to 911 means? Is it simply you send a text message to 911 and it goes through the system?
Yes, that's exactly what it means. It means taking the normal texting capability that virtually everybody has in their cell phone or smartphone and communicating with 911. And a lot of people are surprised to hear that they aren't able to text the 911 already, since it's possible on most of the mobile phones that we have and carry around with us to text almost anybody in the world. But up until recently, it was not possible anywhere in the U.S. to text the 911.
And why was that? What kind of work did you all have to do to make it possible?
Well, the first thing that the FCC did is we actually worked with the wireless carriers, and that's because the wireless carriers are under our regulatory authority, and when people call 911, they are often using their cell phone. In fact, probably 75 to 80% of 911 calls come from cell phones. And what we needed to do was make sure that the wireless carriers put into their systems the ability to send a text to 911. And so we adopted rules about 2 years ago that required all the wireless carriers to implement text to 911 in their networks. And that made it possible for a carrier to send a text, but it did not make it possible for a 911 call center to receive a text. And so that's the second part of the equation, and that's why, in fact, text to 911 is being rolled out gradually. We don't have the ability to, we don't regulate the 911 call centers. We don't have the ability to order them to accept text to 911. And so we left it to states and local jurisdictions that run those 911 call centers to decide when and whether they were going to implement text to 911. And so what we've seen in the last couple of years is an increasing number of call centers around the country that are supporting text to 911 and making it available to the public in their communities.
David, I'm wondering about other apps. I'm thinking about WhatsApp or Skype. I wonder if that's technically possible. And I'm asking because it seems as people are transitioning away from voice lines. I wonder how much the FCC and you all are thinking about people using other apps and maybe not even being tied to a phone system and how that would work technically to then get linked into a 911 system.
We are definitely thinking about that. That's part of a general subject that we call Next Generation 911, which is how is the 911 system going to work using the kinds of internet-based applications and programs that people are increasingly using. That's not part of our current text to 911 requirements, but over the next few years, we expect to be working on issues to expand both texting and other types of communications capabilities into the 911 system that would take advantage of apps and other things.
What are the benefits to texting 911 rather than calling? Have you all seen that there are emergency situations where texting is actually much more important than being able to call?
we have, and it's important to press that voice calling to 911 is still the best option if it's available. And 911 call takers and call managers, managers of call centers, will tell you that they really prefer to get a voice call if the caller is able to make a voice call. But text to 911 is an important backup. And we've already seen several types of situations where text to 911, having it available, is really important because a voice call may not be possible. One of those situations is if the caller is has a hearing or a speech disability, and there are millions of Americans who do. And for them, text to 911 is a way to communicate when a voice call isn't possible for them. We've also seen that text to 911 can be important in situations where making a voice call might put the caller in danger. And that could be a domestic abuse situation. It could be an active shooter situation. Any kind of situation you can imagine, and unfortunately we've seen incidents where this was the case, where calling 911 could actually alert someone you're trying to avoid having do you harm, could alert them to the fact that you're making a 911 call. So texting is preferable in that situation. And we've also seen that there are some times when voice networks become congested, and it's possible that a text message might go through even if a voice call would not go through. So we always start by saying make a voice call if you can, but we want to have text available as an option if you can't.
David, as I'm thinking about this, you did say at the beginning that the FCC has guidelines but doesn't have the ability to force states or jurisdictions to implement text to 911. What is the FCC doing to help encourage municipalities to adopt this?
Well, we work really closely with national 911 organizations and directly with cities and counties that run 911 call centers. There's a lot of good information out there. Now that we have probably about 600 911 call centers around the country that are supporting 911, that provides a lot of information and experience and lessons learned that can help other call centers that are still making the decision or still perhaps undecided about whether they want to implement text to 911. A lot of those lessons learned can make that process easier. The other thing that we wanted to make sure of when we required the carriers to support 911 is we required them to support 911 in ways that would not impose excessive costs on the 911 call centers. So the carriers offer a number of different options for sending texts to 911 call centers, and we wanted to be sure that some of those options were low-cost options that wouldn't force expensive upgrades on the 911 authority.
David, as I mentioned at the beginning of the segment, Illinois is expected to have 14 dispatch centers with text to 911 capability by the end of the year. Where does Illinois fall in states using the system? Do we lag behind in using text to 911 compared to other parts of the country?
I would put you sort of in the middle. There are, by my count right now, there are 7 states that support text to 911 statewide. And one of them is actually Illinois' neighbor, Indiana. Then there are another 30 or so states that are like Illinois, where there are some cities and counties in the state that support text to 911 and others that don't. And then the remaining states, at least based on our records, have not implemented text to 911 anywhere in the state. But we do see a lot of progress on this front. We expect within the next year there are going to be hundreds more 911 call centers around the country that support text to 911. It's really accelerated in the last year, and we expect that trend to continue.
David Firth is the Deputy Chief of the Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau at the FCC. David, thanks for your time.
Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
So how are we doing at the local level? By the end of 2016, Illinois is expected to have 14 emergency dispatch centers that have the ability to accept text messages. Joining us now is Phil McCarty from Jacksonville. That's east of Springfield. Phil's the 911 director at the Jacksonville Police Department's Emergency Dispatch Center, one of the first in the state to upgrade their systems to receive texts. Hey, Phil, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you.
Also with us is Carol Myrna. She's the executive director at the Center for Prevention of Abuse in Peoria. Peoria County introduced their new systems at their dispatch center last week, and Carol was a proponent for the change. Carol, thanks for being with us as well.
Thank you, Nyla. I appreciate being able to be on.
Phil, how long have you all had your text to 911 system?
We implemented our text in November of last year.
And you've seen firsthand how that's helping people. Can you give us some examples of how people are using the system right now?
We've had instances where people were held against their will and were able to text the center where it may not have been safe to call. Jacksonville also has an extremely high deaf population, so the text has allowed them to have access to the center as well.
Mm. And previously, Phil, if you were deaf, what were the capabilities for calling or reaching 911 prior to having your text system? What did you guys have in place?
Most of the deaf used a relay service in the past, which extremely enhanced the amount of time it took for us to interact with the callers. Or previous to that, they used a TDD or TDY process, which we were typing back and forth on. Is a similar to a text, but it's not near as fast.
Mm-hmm. Carol, why were you so adamant about Peoria having a text to 911 system? Why do you think it's important?
Well, we're all about safety at the Center for Prevention of Abuse. You know, we're a comprehensive, multi-county, community-based effort that works very hard to help women, men, and children of all ages live free from violence and abuse. And we cover the gamut, every age group. Our youngest client is 2, our oldest client is 102. And we have a lot of folks that come to us to seek peace. We have order of protection offices in 3 county courthouses. And in all facets of what we do safety planning with our clients. And this is another tool in a safety plan to help people gain access to help. Oftentimes people are very worried about creating a more volatile situation if the abuser feels that they're being reported or a call is being made. So this is just another way to gain access to help.
Mm-hmm. And what about places? What do you do with people throughout Illinois if they don't have the ability to text to 911? What do you tell your clients?
Well, we've got a number of ways that we safety plan with folks. It depends upon their lifestyle, depends upon where they live in an urban or rural setting. We work with them to discover ways that they can let maybe their neighbors know, a friend or family that they need help, ways to escape a situation. You know, fact is that someone will leave an abusive situation 7 to 8 times before they finally leave it for good. So the need for safety planning is key. And many times you'll find that a situation becomes more violent and more fearful when somebody is about ready to leave. So people fear for their life, and we have to help them find ways to get the assistance they need. Text 911 is just another way to do that, and we're promoting it as best we can. We serve about 5,000 people a year in a 6-county area, and we're promoting it with all of them.
Carol, I think people might think, I wonder if you can just explain for a minute. I imagine there are probably obvious cases where a victim of domestic abuse couldn't pick up the phone and call 911. Is this something where you also think having text to 911 in domestic abuse situations maybe could help empower children as well, I imagine?
I would imagine so. It's every walk of life. You know, nobody's immune from no area, no community, no group is immune from domestic violence. It affects every walk of life, every age group, every socioeconomic group, all genders, all religions. And sure, we safety plan with children. When we have a parent come to one of our emergency shelters and they have children with them, we have a children's center. We provide therapeutic services for children, and we do work with them on how to safety plan. Unfortunately, it's a necessary part of what happens.
Phil, how often are you seeing text to 911 being used at your dispatch center in Jacksonville?
We see text to 911 calls every month. It kind of varies. As we implemented the program, getting the word out was very important. So as we did that, we saw a steady increase. We also still prefer to get that phone call. So even though we like having a secondary path into our communication center, we still like to see that phone call. So we haven't seen an overwhelming amount of numbers come in. So we see on an average of about 2 to 5 per month, which doesn't seem like a lot, but and that's fine for us. We still prefer the phone call. But when people need to use it, we want them to know that it is available.
Why is the phone call important for you, Phil?
Phone call is, it's very difficult to sense urgency in a text message. It's a text and it doesn't have any motion in a text. I can hear background noise on a phone call and it's instant communication. We got guaranteed delivery with the phone call. We do not have that with text. The carrier, it could get caught somewhere in the process, and we don't have any closure. With phone, that technology has been around for so long, it gives us much more accurate locations and much quicker. Now, text does provide a little bit of that. You do at least get some input from us, so that's one of the reasons why the phone call is a little bit better, but if your only way is to text, then that's the way we want you to get a hold of it.
Sure, and that's good for people to know also. But when you're texting, I guess you guys don't necessarily get the exact location right away?
That is correct. We
okay.
do not get the exact location. We get a general idea where it's at. And so that's one of the reasons that, you know, a phone call is better. And a lot of people call us as they're driving down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't need you to be texting when you're driving down the road. It's not safe. It never is safe and it never has been safe, so that phone call is a lot safer.
When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Phil and Carol about text to 911 across Illinois. You're listening to The 21st. Stay tuned. By the way, as always, if you have questions or comments, you can call us. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show, and we'll continue this conversation in just a minute. You're listening to The 21st. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about text to 911 systems throughout Illinois. As we've just been hearing from the FCC, Illinois ranks about halfway through compared to other states that have, unlike our neighboring Indiana, where the entire system is already on text to 911. We're not quite there yet. We're talking to people who have incorporated that into their systems. Phil McCarty is a 911 director at the Jacksonville Police Department's Emergency Dispatch Center. They were one of the first in the state to upgrade their systems. Also on the line with us from Peoria is Carol Myrna, where she's the executive director at the Center for Prevention of Abuse. And she's been talking about how important it is, particularly for domestic abuse victims, to be able to have access to text to 911. Phil, I just wanted you to underscore one point, which is why you prefer to have, if possible, a phone call, why that's important. If you can just remind everybody, it's because they can get the location and they have instant reaction and it's just a lot faster, correct?
That's absolutely correct. The technology with text to 911 is just not quite there yet to give us the exact locations as it is when you're on your landline phone or a wireless device. It is much more quicker and accurate if to place that call. But if you can't do it, we want to get you help, so text is the next best.
I know we've talked to a few people throughout the state about the fact that 911 dispatch centers, some of them in counties with less than 250,000 people, are being cut. Carol, does that, just the fact that there are some 911 dispatch centers that staffing is decreased, does that worry you just about 911 centers in general?
Well, certainly. We want to make sure that we have as much help as we can get out there for folks that are victimized by any sort of situation. But, you know, I discovered with Peoria County that the cell service providers have really, and I realize what the gentleman from the FCC said, that it was mandated, but they have truly stepped up. I use Verizon as an example. Their philanthropy is domestic violence, and they're the ones, one of the cell service providers active in bringing Peoria County into the digital age with their 911 and being able to text. It costs Peoria County nothing, as I understand it, to bring these services. And we're going to be encouraging all of the other counties in our service area to do the same as soon as they can. I don't know how much of a personnel change it would require to have this service. I understand that it comes through the same means as other 911 calls. So I don't know that the amount of personnel would impact the ability to receive text 911. But we hate to hear that any safety personnel, anybody that helps bring safety to people, we hate to hear that those services have to be reduced at any place.
Phil, how did it work for you all with Jacksonville? Was it expensive to adopt the system? Does it require more staff or less staff?
The staffing is the same. It wasn't expensive to implement the system. However, we did take on a quite lengthy public education campaign. So obviously that does cost a little bit of money. But all in all, the implementation process was fairly painless. As Carol mentioned, the cell phone providers work very, very closely with us, and they carry the flag for us, and they make it very easy for us to implement this process. Of all the processes we've implemented, this by far was the easiest. Education of the public is very important to us as well, so we may lean heavier than some on that, just to make sure that getting the word out.
Carol, how important is it, do you think, for every dispatch center in Illinois to adopt text to 911?
You know, for every three calls about domestic violence that come in, statistics tell us that there are about seven more that go unreported. And we have to ask ourselves why. Why would instances of brutality go unreported to authorities? It's not for lack of services that are out there. It's not a lack of people who care. It's just that there are situations where the threat of enhanced violence, more volatility, would cause somebody not to make the phone call. So if a text message is easier, if it's something that they can do because they can't make a phone call. You know, I remember the story a few years ago about the woman who called and was pretending to order pizza when she was actually calling 911 and did so effectively. You know, sometimes people use any means to be able to get the help that they need, and we want them to do that. So being able to provide this service on a wide basis, statewide, would be fantastic. But like I said, we're certainly going to be promoting it throughout all six of our counties that we cover.
That's Carol Myrna. She's the executive director at the Center for Prevention of Abuse. Thanks also to Phil McCarty, the 911 director at the Jacksonville Police Department's Emergency Dispatch Center. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Nyla.
Thank you.
We are going to have a list of 911, text to 911 available, where it is throughout the state in Illinois, up on our website. And just a reminder, if you text to 911 and it's not available in your area, the cell phone companies will bounce back and say this isn't working. You're listening to The 21st.
I note the obvious differences between each sort and type, but we are more alike, my friends, than we are unalike. We are more alike, my friends, than we are unalike.
We want some heroes in our story. We need highlights for a nightlight. We need glory for a while. We want results. We want results. Hit our families, hit our folks, bombs bursting in air. Oh, say.
What's the matter, Usain?
What if I don't win?
What if you don't win? Since when did you become so serious, boy?
Fred.
Will you send Bolt strike yet again?
Those are just a few official and unofficial Olympic ads you've been hearing for the past few weeks. The Olympics are, of course, a big business, even though the ads are preaching lots of unity and love, as you heard. Joining us to talk about the business of the ads behind this year's Olympics is E.J. Schultz. He's the Chicago Bureau Chief for Ad Age. E.J., welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks. Good to be here.
How have Olympic ads been performing this summer?
I would say that to me, there's one campaign that sort of stands above everyone else right now, and that's the Nike campaign. You may have seen it. It's called Unlimited, and it's essentially a series of ads that shows athletes sort of pushing beyond their boundaries to almost ridiculous levels. That particular campaign has last time we checked, had gotten something like 112 million views online, in addition to obviously being shown during the game. So I would say that's probably number one at this point.
Right, and we actually that was the Chance the Rapper that we heard. That was actually one he was commissioned for Nike that we just played a minute ago.
Beyond that, we're seeing a lot of the same themes you see sort of every Olympics, which, as you mentioned, was sort of, unity, hand-holding, in a way trying to bring the world together. It was interesting, Samsung had put a spot out called Anthem, which was sort of more their global ad that showed essentially people in different countries singing national anthems, but they weren't singing their own country's anthem. They were singing another country's anthem. The interesting thing, though, about that is that Samsung here in the U.S. has been running another ad starring Christoph Waltz, which is more of a lighthearted take on sort of American patriotism. So I just think that's interesting how Samsung has sort of shown the ads in different markets.
Well, and I'm also thinking about what other new messages we're seeing, because this was the first year that we had, for example, and I know this was a big part of the opening ceremonies, a refugee Olympic team. And I know it's always a delicate balance companies have, but I've noticed that there's been a lot of advertising around the agencies and companies that have supported that refugee team. I notice they seem like they've taken advantage of that.
That's right. I think one of the marketers doing that is Visa, which has featured a Syrian refugee in an ad. She has a really interesting backstory of actually escaping the Syrian war and helping, she sort of swam to safety and pulling, 17 fellow refugees behind her. So that's certainly an effective way to get at an issue that is definitely a current event.
You know, when we're thinking about this, we didn't really have Snapchat 4 years ago. Instagram was just taking off. How have agencies been using new media this year surrounding Rio?
One of the interesting campaigns that I covered was from Toyota, which actually is not an official sponsor. And there's all kinds of rules. If you don't pay the U.S. Olympic Committee the sponsorship dollars, and you're not allowed to use all the Olympic images, the rings, et cetera. Well, Toyota is not a sponsor, but they found a way to really kind of get a campaign on Snapchat that sort of hints at the Olympics in about as strong as way as possible without, using those trademark phrases, with, of course, the little, 7-second snap ads on Snapchat, one of them showing a guy doing sort of a Olympic maneuver on top of his car. And so there were sort of lighthearted ways of showing everyday people kind of doing Olympic type activities. I thought that was pretty effective.
EJ, I think especially for McDonald's, I feel like the athletes are doing their advertising for McDonald's, like with all the Instagrams and Snapchats of the free food they're getting in the Olympic Village. I'm thinking about Usain Bolt's like Instagram with his chicken McNuggets, or the badminton player from Australia, Sawan Sarasinghe. I think he's the one that they put the rule about you can only get 20 items for free in the Olympic Village because he took a picture of all of the food that he got. I mean, for the example of McDonald's, is that sort of like their secondary level people doing marketing for them that just really pays off more than any of the ads they'll ever buy?
I think you're right. And some of these top sponsors have activations sort of on the ground in Rio. Coca-Cola, for instance, I had signed up some sort of millennial blogger type people to actually do social media dispatches from Rio that gets spread around the internet. So there's definitely multiple levels of marketing going on beyond the kind of cinematic TV ad that most people are seeing on NBC.
Well, right, and I'm thinking in particular of what we played in the montage at the beginning of our conversation, which is the Usain Bolt Gatorade movie. And I think when I checked how many tens of millions of people have viewed that movie, and it's just this animated movie about Usain Bolt and his life. And really, it's interesting product placement because you just see a Gatorade logo at the beginning and right at the end. And I just wonder how much companies are kind of devoting much more space to, say, that YouTube video that's going to get viewed tens of millions of times and just kind of have that slight moment at the beginning and end that's Gatorade. I mean, how much more are companies kind of focusing on that than the traditional TV ad?
I mean, I think, yeah, for sure, that's a trend we're seeing across advertising for a while now, where you don't necessarily want to hit people over the head with your brand. You want to actually tell stories online, and the goal is obviously engagement. And you're not, people are so skeptical these days that they can sniff out a traditional ad within a few seconds, and online, they're going to be clicking away within a moment. So you have a short period of time to get their attention. So we're definitely seeing that playing out in the Olympics as well.
Yeah, so 10.4 million views that Usain Bolt Gatorade mini movie has. Let me ask you, EJ, how do Olympic ads rank up against, just when we're going back to sort of the traditional space, Super Bowl ads? Because is it second? I mean, I'm thinking about it being a global market, also the length of the Olympics. What's your sense of that?
I think, well, one of the stories this year is that the ratings are actually a little bit underwhelming on NBC in terms of the broadcast ratings. Whereas the Super Bowl ratings just keep kind of going up every year. And if you think about it, there's a lot key differences between the events. Obviously, the Super Bowl has become sort of an unofficial holiday. People make plans to watch it. It's also in the middle of the winter, so much of the country is snowbound and basically watching TV. The Olympics occur, here in late summer. People are finishing up their summer vacations. They're going to check in and watch it, certain events on the Olympics, but it doesn't feel to me as much as, appointment TV as the Super Bowl is. I guess the advantage of the Olympic advertising is that you do have 2 weeks. So if you're a marketer and you're paying the big bucks to advertise, you can sort of develop storylines over those 2 weeks. Nike, case in point, they've come out with a couple new ads during the games as the games have gone by. Obviously, as you mentioned, the global nature of the Olympics as well is another strong point, whereas the Super Bowl, I think, has made inroads in other countries, but certainly not to the level of the Olympics.
And as you think about, I'm curious about the note about ratings, and it's kind of been underwhelming. I do feel like this Olympics, I don't know if you would say there's been an energy around it, certainly to start, where it didn't seem as if people were as engaged and excited as I've seen in previous years. Do you have a sense of, do you think that's accurate?
It's, in one respect, it's been a little surprising because the time zone of Rio is so favorable for live viewing in NBC, although they've caught some flack for doing some stuff on tape delay. A lot of this stuff has been shown live. Almost all the swimming was shown live. A lot of the track and field events.
Yeah, everything. Usain Bolt has been live, right? All of his races.
In this day and age, live TV is everything. It's where marketers are moving most of their money because people want to watch stuff as it occurs. So that the Olympics had that going for it this year. Rio is only an hour earlier than New York City, whereas some of these upcoming games are in Asian countries, and there's a much bigger difference in the time zone. But I think that the general trend across all television is that ratings are just slowly evaporating because people have so many other ways to watch content, whether it's online, or as I mentioned, just the time of year it is, it's not necessarily like people are hunkered down in front of their TV.
That's EJ Schultz. He's the Chicago Bureau Chief for Ad Age. EJ, we just have about 30 seconds left. What's your favorite ad?
I would probably say the Nike campaign. One of the more recent ones was the one they did with a 86-year-old nun who is a Ironman triathlete. I thought that was
cool. All right. We'll find that one and tweet it out for everyone. EJ, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. You're listening to The 21st.
been lying down. Let's be honest, I'm closer than ever now. To a good night's sleep, it's been so I've been lying down.
I'm Nyla Boodoo, and that's Passenger. It's the title track of a brand new album from the band Uriah. Their frontman, Eric Stanley, is in studio with me now. Hey, Eric, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Hey, how's it going?
So your album is coming out today, so we should say congratulations.
Oh, man, it's coming out. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
It has been a long...
It's been so long that you don't realize that. You know, we wanted to have you in studio because we've been thinking a lot about the music scene in Champaign-Urbana becoming one of the biggest spots outside of Chicago for bands in Illinois. Yeah. You're going to be playing this weekend in Champaign-Urbana. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about your new record?
Yeah, it's six songs that are a concept about a family member of mine who's been struggling with an ongoing drug addiction. And it was kind of written as a potential tool to try and help the situation a little bit.
Help the situation for you or help the situation for your family or everyone?
For him. I guess with that, what typically comes with drug problems is kind of this wall. Can be created by that, to where it's very, very hard to break through. And I've always felt that I felt that I've kind of grown as a musician enough to be able to write songs about things that mean something to me. And I thought that these songs could be used as a tool to show him and to hopefully kind of dig beneath the surface a little bit and help out and improve the situation.
How long did you work on this album?
About a year and a half altogether.
Yeah.
Writing.
And how does it feel to finally be releasing it now?
Oh, it's unreal. this has been a long one. And since it's only six songs, I feel like I've just put a lot more work into just six songs. You know, I've never worked this long on something before, and I had these written early enough to where we could really work on them as a band, and for it to all be done is just a little bit therapeutic and just awesome.
Yeah, it sounds like it's such a heavy subject matter that you've taken to writing about. Where did the title Passenger come from? That's what we just heard you play, right?
Yeah. You know, I originally wrote this song, and that was the first one that I started on for the record. And just writing the lyric on the passenger side of the floor of my car is a lyric that's later on in the song. I was thinking about what would be the perfect word for these songs that I've written. And I was thinking about the word passenger in general, just because that lyric was in there. And thinking about the struggles that he's gone through and the wants to help the situation, and knowing that nothing is really going to be very effective until he is ready for it. And in that sense, I feel like a passenger. We did a little bit of a promo video for a campaign that we did as a pre-order for the record. And, you know, as I said in that, you know, I have really felt like I'm just a passenger observing this scary thing.
So the album's called Passenger. I'm talking mm-hmm. to the frontman for the band, Uriah, Eric Stanley. It's out today, actually, from Airship Records, a Champaign-based label. And so you played Passenger. Mm-hmm. You brought your guitar with you, obviously. Can you mm-hmm. play another song for us?
Yes, I can.
Which one's, what's this called?
Hesitation. I can do that. Thank you.
was wet enough. You could write your name, and you had the thought you would get away with it, even though you know you haven't had the best of luck department. I don't know a single person who could keep their composure. I want to see the path you walked in to a whirlwind so encompassing, it's a more fitting name than what's written in that concrete. You are, and I wish I had known what you are capable of. Can't stay on all of the thoughts. A line I'm hesitant to draw, and I don't want this anymore. Oh, oh, I know I have an awful temper, but when you said what you had done, I was afraid of that idea.
That's Hesitation. It's from the album Passenger by the band Uriah. Their frontman, Eric Stanley, is in studio today. The album actually comes out today from Airship Records. They're a Champagne-based label. Eric, there's so much emotion behind those lyrics. And, you were sharing at the beginning of this that it deals with addiction and how you're dealing with that with someone around you.
Yeah.
Did you... It makes me think, I almost wonder, did you write the lyrics first before you wrote the music?
Yeah, that was the primary focus. And here and there, there are melodies that come to mind, and then you can fit things into that. But I spent, probably even a little more time than the actual instrumentation, just as far as guitars are concerned, I spent on lyric writing.
How long have you guys been together, Uriah?
About 2 years now.
Was it tough to bring such a personal experience to the band to play for you?
I never really thought of it as that. It's been difficult now that I've had to play the songs. But, I just... The more that I grow in songwriting and playing in bands, the more I want whatever I'm writing and whatever I'm a part of in those things to mean something to me and mean something to those around me. So I didn't really see that as that at the beginning. I didn't see it as kind of a burden, I guess.
Well, have you found it? Has it been cathartic? Maybe not yet.
I have been playing the tunes acoustic at several shows around town. It's been something that is a bit difficult to get used to. And I wanted to play them by myself before we had the full band presentation at the Accord on Saturday. Because I just wanted to wrap my mind around it. It was something that I've been spending so much time just playing these in my room, trying to get over the emotions of it and trying to find a kind of a medium between too much emotion with it and then not feeling numb to the songs at all.
Yeah, it's hard to be in that performance space, right?
Yeah.
Because you want to be authentic, but then that's a lot to leave on the stage every time you're performing.
Yeah, and it's been really odd. You know, I feel like every time I've played them so far, I've shed at least a couple of tears, and even people in the audience have as well, and that's something that's, I haven't really put much thought to that yet, but it's definitely something new and something interesting.
It'll be really interesting to, as you continue to play this music, the kind of reaction you hear and the feedback you get from people about it too.
Yeah.
Have you started to get that?
Yeah. I've gotten more feedback about this than anything I've done in the past, and the band has gotten more support. I have the best musicians surrounding me for this, to the point that I don't just feel like this is my band. It's really cool. I've got three other guys that are very good at writing stuff on their own instruments. It's been cool hearing feedback from it. As soon as we had the tracks, even the first mix from the tracks, I was sending it out to a ton of just friends back home from Southern Illinois for probably the past decade. I've been in Champaign a couple of years now. Sending it to old friends and just, I don't know, there's been like a couple that I look up to musically that have been really excited about this, and that's just been a really cool thing.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that with us. You guys are playing this weekend?
Yes.
Where are you playing?
The Accord. The show starts at 9, I believe, doors at 8. Terra Terra's playing, Grandkids, and The Innkeepers.
So you're playing Saturday night in Champaign at the mm-hmm. Accord.
Mm-hmm.
The album is called Passenger. It's out today. The label's Airship Records. Where can people get the music?
UriahMusic.com. Uriah is spelled E-U-R-I-A-H.
We'll tweet the link out, too. But we wanted to mm-hmm. end. We like to end Fridays and end the show with a song. So what's mm-hmm. the final song you're going to play for us?
I'm going to play Ingrained.
All right. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. This has been hard. I knew from the start that I would give up on you before you mend your heart.
Does it for us this week. You know, you can always find our past shows on the NPR One app. Search for The 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. We love feedback. You can call, email, or tweet. All of that's on our website at 21stshow.org. We're produced by Christine Herman, Philip Sabika, and Sean Newman with assistance from Ben Thomas Payne. Special thanks to Ben. It's his last day interning with us before he starts back at Augustana College on Monday. Technical direction and engineering is by Steve Morick. Scott Cameron is our news director. Joe Yoon and Nick Vance from the University of Illinois' Social Media Analytics Lab provide research help. And special thanks to Dan Public Access for our theme music. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.